Okay, very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Sunday, 31st May 2020. So we will prepare for puja. So let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall proceed with the puja chanting. Okay. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Ami To Fo. Namo Ami To Fo. Namo Ami To Fo. Namo Milo Fo. Namo Milo Fo. Namo Milo, Namo Pusyan Pusa, Namo Pusyan Pusa, Namo Pusyan Pusa, Namo Dizang Wang Pusa, Namo Dizang Wang Pusa, Namo Dizang Wang Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivahimi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Pana tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu michachara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Pajam. Buddhang Pujeme. Dhammang Pujeme. Sanghang Pujeme. Okay. Y'all can be seated. I think Ananda Ajayanta is here. Huh? So just nice. I think the timing is just nice. Yeah. Okay. A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma again. Eh? So today is again a very auspicious day, 31st, last day of May 2020. It also coincides with Dr. Jayanta's birthday. Eh? Let us wish him a very happy, blessed, and auspicious birthday. Eh? Then we rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And he purposely make all the effort to bring offerings all the way from Malacca. And the three of them, the Esther, Dr. Jayanta, together with, I think, the mother, and Ananda. They have a lot of offering at the back. Then there are some down there. Then Dr. Jayanta is so like full of joy, gratitude, and sincerity. And he texted me this morning to request permission to come and join our class. So they are here, the timing is just right. So Jayanta and Ananda is with me in my house. So we can actually get Jayanta to light the last candle. We kept the candle for him. The lighter? Where's the lighter? Yeah, put, get the lighter. Yeah. So before we start our meditation, we let Jayanta light the candle, Sakyamuni. So you all can see him. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. So now we have completed that formality part of offering and also make announcement on Dr. Jayanta's birthday. It seems the youth, they gave him a very good video clip and surprise for the birthday. I saw it just now, my daughter played to me. So with that, we can maybe continue with our today's program. We're supposed to share on the unique code, page 34, but before we do that, we will have our usual half an hour of meditation. So I will set the alarm, then you all can prepare yourself to develop the meditation. So meditation, as I have explained, you understand what your true mind is, and you know what meditation is, you will know how to meditate. It's very simple. You only need to remember the four support. Most important is the first three support. Relax into all mind state that arise, then maintain awareness. Don't try to know, just let things be. To realize your true mind, your silent mind. The moment you can realize that true mind, the silent mind, you will be in the state of no thought. That is your meditative state. That is what sati is. It's just an awareness nature before the knowing. There's no thought involved. It is that nature, that true mind, that silent mind, the meditative mind that can meditate and understand. That's why when you relax and maintain awareness, then let this original state of your silent mind return. Means the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the sankhara activity, they will slow down and finally stop. So all meditation starts from there. Because according to the Buddha, you need to train your mind to be heedful. And to be heedful, you need to realize your true mind so that you can be ever mindful. Stay there. When you are able to realize your true mind, that is the beginning of sati, then you stabilize it to be ever mindful. Yeah, then you use it to meditate. It becomes heedfulness. So whether you use method or technique or skillful means, it's just to bring you to this point. But people don't understand. That's why meditation becomes very confusing to many people. The emphasis is given to methods and technique, and also object of meditation, and sometimes to the technique and method introduced by their respective teacher. But all these are just skillful means. They are not the meditation. It's just an object of meditation or a technique or a skillful means to anchor your mind, because they find it very difficult to train that mind. They cannot do anything to the heedless thinking, the instability of that mind, because they lack the spiritual faculty, but they don't understand. Due to the lack of this five spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance keep on arising, and that's the reason why their mind become heedless, restless, think a lot, and they can't meditate, because all these five mental hindrance, they will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So if you understand this, then straight away you will know how to meditate. But for those who are still not familiar, haven't developed the stability or understanding, you still need to rely on the method, technique, or skillful means or object of meditation. You can use them. You can go into them, no problem. But towards the end, you will come to understand. Technically, you don't need them. There's a reason why finally, when you realize the true mind, you don't need the method and the technique. You can be at peace there and then, straight away. When your spiritual faculty are there, sati is automatic. The saddha virya will bring about sati. Then when you stabilize it, samadhi will be there. Then you will realize paucity, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. Then you will realize your true mind. Then your mind will enter sati. Then you will continue to see things as they are, awaken and develop the wisdom. That is basically what meditation is. It's very simple, very easy. Okay, so with that, I will let you meditate on your own awareness-based meditation. I will off the light. Then we can have half an hour of silent awareness meditation. Remember, relax, aware, maintain awareness for as long as you can. Don't try to know. Stabilize that silent mind. Then you will understand what meditation is. Okay. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation and remain silent, quiet, peaceful within. Whatever mind state that you have developed, try to maintain them for as long as you can. So the purpose of formal meditation is to train yourself to develop the condition for this mind to quiet down, to silent, to become peaceful, still and aware within. So this first training is very important. And when you understand the training is very simple, then these are the mind state that you need to develop the living. That's why we call it the daily mindfulness. When you are in the midst of living life, you need to be ever mindful, constantly meditating. Then only there is heedfulness. Knowing that all meditation must start with heedfulness, we have to really develop the training of the mind to be heedful. And to be heedful is very simple. There is only two parts. First, ever mindful. So to be ever mindful, we have to start with mindfulness, then stabilize it to become ever mindful. When the spiritual faculties are there, saddha virya will bring about sati. Then when sati is developed, that is the beginning of training. It has to be a free mind. A free mind that is quiet, peaceful and still without thought. And that is your true mind. That is your meditative mind. Then when you stabilize it, it becomes ever mindful. And then that one meditate. That one develop the understanding of the teaching. That one will insight into phenomena. That one will observe. That one will see. That is the silent mind that will meditate. Yeah. So finally, the whole of meditation is after you have developed the understanding of the essential Dhamma, it will enable you to straighten your views, to develop the initial wisdom. Then when your view are straightened, you will develop the understanding to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Because from right view, you start. Three aspects of right view, the spiritual law. Karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. Every of this right view is very powerful. It's linked to the dhamma. It's linked to the cultivation. Karma niyama is about karma. It's about transforming yourself to improve your life, to make your mind different. Instead of heedless, make it heedful. And the advice of the Buddha also came from that right view, because the Buddha, without fail, keep on emphasizing to us the importance of karma. Under the daily contemplation, the fifth contemplation, he said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So almost 100% of our life depend on karma. So what must we do? That's why we have to take care of karma. Then karma will take care of our life. Then karma will transform our life for the better. That's how we change. That's how we improve ourselves. That's how the Dhamma becomes beautiful. It can transform living beings. It can change you over from a heedless way of thinking to a heedful way of thinking, so that you will have the good life, so that you will have the ability to avoid all evil to good, then purify your mind. And this is the advice of the Buddha. So the advice of the Buddha is basically to train your mind to develop the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Then when you are able to do that, you are incapable of negativity. That's how you take care of your karma. Because when you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, you have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right effort. That is what precept is all about. That is how you avoid all evil. That's how you cultivate goodness. So the first two advice come from the first five Noble Eightfold Path factors. From right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, or right living, and for right effort. So this is the precept part. This is the cultivation of virtue, wholesomeness, avoiding of evil. Then when the sixth path factor, samasati, when this arises through our formal meditation training, leading to the daily mindfulness, that accumulate into samasati. When you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. So the last two path factors, samasati and samasamadhi, will lead to the stability of mind that can awaken, that can insight into phenomena. With sati and samadhi, you can see things as they are. Then you can awaken. Then wisdom will arise. That's how the fifth spiritual faculties come to be. And this completes the meditation. So when you understand this, meditation become very easy, cultivation become very easy, and the Buddha Dhamma become very beautiful. Yeah. We really will have a lot of respect and gratitude towards the Buddha. And we will understand the real beauty of the Buddha Dhamma. It not only transforms us, it can make us enlightened, give us the good life, the noble life, and free our mind from all suffering. And our mind state is always tranquil, peaceful, still, aware, heedful, without agitation, without any of this heedless thinking, restlessness, and all those things, without the mental hindrance. The spiritual faculties are always with you. You are ever mindful. Constantly meditative, tranquil, peaceful, aware, and mindful. Yeah. Then there's a lot of joy, there's a lot of clarity, there's a lot of peace within. That is the noble life. That is what life is all about. No more of those misery, suffering, agitation, and all these things. So this will explain the part that you need to know about meditation, leading to the transformation. Then later on, if we have time or condition, we will discuss more about the beauty of this teaching, the Buddha Dhamma, so that you can actually help to promote this teaching so that more and more people can benefit from it. In fact, the Buddhist teaching is so wonderful, so beautiful, so meaningful, but is not really properly taught or highlighted or explained. The Buddha is teaching, if you have the understanding, you can really, really explain them beautifully. Then it will appeal to the younger generation. It will also appeal to the older generation. It will appeal to all of humanity. It is such a beautiful teaching. Where can you find a teaching that is so meaningful, so beautiful, that can allow you to understand life completely, both the mundane and the supramundane? Then when you understand life, you know how to live life, and your life transforms. It transforms you from a heedless, normal human being that has a lot of suffering, misery, problem, into an enlightened being that is free of all this suffering, misery, or negativity of mind state. Then you don't have any problem with life. You can be at peace with all things, at all place, under all circumstances. So such a teaching is rare to come by. Indeed, very, very rare. And when, as a Buddhist, we are indeed very blessed very lucky in a sense. So it will enable us to develop the understanding of it, because this teaching is already there. We only need to develop the understanding of it through somebody who can share the understanding with us. Then we can put it to test. We can use it to live it in our life. When you can apply it and it stand up to investigation, conform to all the explanation that the Buddha has given us, then we realize it for ourselves that this is true noble teaching, beautiful teaching that can lead to enlightenment in the here and now. We don't have to wait for that. All our so-called problem, worldly problem, or the planet's problem can be resolved through understanding this teaching. And this will help transform all humanity so that we can be really happy, peaceful, wise, and be a blessing to all. Then the totality of consciousness will change, will transform, and it will evolve. Then there is no more delusion, no more ignorance, no more negativity of mind state. The evil roots, when they start to subside, cease because of the wisdom, the understanding. When all these are rooted out, our world will be a very beautiful world. It will be very different. Pollution, everything, crime, suffering, misery, all this will subside. Then you can have a very different and transformed world. You can say it's an ideal world. Certain religion call it utopia, but we don't have to call it by any name. As long as the Buddha Dharma is there, like the Buddha say, Noble Eightfold Path is within the teaching, within the world, within the mind of living being. The world will not be without the enlightened beings. The world will definitely have Aryas. And when the Aryas are around, it will help to transform the others. That's how it will evolve and it will become beautiful. Yeah. But we need the numbers. The numbers at the moment are still very small. We need at least the critical mass, 1% of the human population. Yeah. Then very fast it will transform. Yeah. It will engulf all of humanity. Okay, with that, we will continue with our invocation to the devas. Page 6. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the king of sages, Nibbana. Oh, sorry, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chyokawalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkadang Dhamma Sabanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Sabanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Sabanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho vicacarana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Opanayiko Tachatam Veditatmo Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Saukasango Ujupatipano Bhagavato Saukasango Nyayapatipano Bhagavato Saukasango Samichipatipano Bhagavato Saukasango Yadidang chattari purisa yogani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato saukasango ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaneyo anuttarang punyaketang Lokasati sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, thank you so much. Huh? So now we can continue on page 34 of our unique Dhamma code. So we will start with unique code 120. With sati and samadhi develop, like I explained just now under the way for palm cultivation, wisdom or panya, which is the fifth spiritual faculty, will arise. With wisdom, all the five mental hindrances will cease, and the mind will be in a meditative state all the time, naturally, without any effort, without you trying to do anything, because there is no more mental hindrance. The moment the spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrances, there is an automatic thing. The five spiritual faculty is the opposite spiritual faculty that will do away or root out the mental hindrance. The mental hindrance are there in the very first place is because you lack these five spiritual faculty. That's why the Buddha in his teaching made this very clear. He called it mental hindrance because it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. And this is basically what sati is all about. When there is sati, there is no mental hindrance. When there is no sati, mental hindrance will be there. And there are many types of mental hindrance. So mental hindrance, apart from sati, you also have what they call restlessness of mind. The mind become restless is because they don't have right view, they don't have wisdom, they lack the spiritual faculty, mainly sati and wisdom. If they don't have wisdom, they don't have sati, their mind will have problem. Then the other thing that can help them overcome restlessness or doubt is faith in the Buddha and his teaching. That's why sadha is very important. When you have sadha, your mind is very calm, very composed. There is no doubt. And when there is no doubt, there is no restlessness of mind. It's only when your faith is not strong, doubt arises. When doubt arises, your mind becomes restless. It starts to have problems. It's not sure. You got a lot of doubt leading to fear, worry, anxiety. Then when you don't keep your precept, because you lack mindfulness. You lack wisdom. You cannot keep your precept. So what happened? You violate your precept. You break your precept. You kill. You harm. You cheat. You deceive. You commit sexual misconduct. You lie. You do all the wrong thing that constitute major evil, like partake intoxicant. Then your consciousness get into trouble. You went down. You become heedless. So if you were to violate your precept, you will land yourself into a lot of situation that is very problematic. The police will come after you. Your enemy will come after you. People whom you cheat, deceive, kill, harm, and cause karmic negativity. They want to take revenge. They want to seek revenge. They will come after you. Then if you partake intoxicant, you land yourself into serious danger. Like those drunken people, accident can happen. Then when you are drunk or intoxicated by drugs and alcohol, liquor, your mind state becomes very down. You are most of the time unconscious. Because when you are drunk, you know, the brain like shut down, lapse into the unconscious. You are hardly conscious. If you are hardly conscious, how can you be aware? When you are hardly conscious, you become heedless. That's why the heedless are as if they, you commit a lot of suffering. So without the spiritual faculty, you are dead. So this mental hindrance become very powerful. Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your insecurity, your misery come from violation of precept. Will cause you to have the miserable life. You will be constantly haunted by people, by the law. And because of that, your mind is restless. There is insecurity, there is fear, there is worry, there is anxiety, and you lack peace. You cannot calm down. That's why without sila, you cannot keep your precept. Without sila, samadhi cannot kick in because the mental hindrance is too strong. You cannot meditate. You need precept to bring about the calm mind, the tranquil mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind. And this mind is a free mind, not in concentration. That is what meditation is all about. So spiritual faculty, especially saddha virya leading to sati, stabilizing it to samadhi, leading to wisdom, is most important. When you have them, all the mental hindrance will cease. The first two mental hindrance of sensual desire, you will also very powerful. That's how your mind stir and react to sense experience. Like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. The first of the two evil roots of greed and hatred, they are in the first two mental hindrance. And throughout the day, if you stir your mind, react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile, if you even think, this mental hindrance become very strong, very powerful. And it develops into habitual tendency. It's like every moment of sense experience, you will stir your mind, you will react. You want things your way. Your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, like and dislike, they will surface. When this happens, it creates mental hindrance. And mental hindrance are mind state that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So how can you meditate? And if throughout the day you are arising this, it has become habitual. When you silent your mind, try to meditate, it can never be silent. But the habitual tendency of thinking, reacting, keep on arising. Because your life that you have while living your normal daily life is not in order. You live a life of disorder, heedlessness, with all the mental hindrance. That's the reason why you cannot cope. So in order for mental hindrance to cease, you must have wisdom. You must have faith. You must have sati, Once you have sati, wisdom, and faith, sensual desire and ill will cannot arise. That's why you must develop yoniso manasikara, initial wisdom, step four of vijasutta, so that your mind does not stir or react to sense experience like before, so that it's no longer that heedless. Most of the time it's at peace because you already have the initial wisdom to accept the reality of the moment, to accept the world for what they are, to accept people for what they are. Like the Buddha say, when condition is such, things will be such. The isness of things, the reality itself. And then you can be at peace under all circumstances. That's what wisdom is all about. So this is what meditation and the teaching is all about when you understand. Spiritual faculty is most important. Once the spiritual faculty is developed, technically, you don't need to train your mind. You don't need method, don't need technique. You will be in the meditative state straight away because there is no more mental hindrance, nothing to hinder your mind. Relax, silent, aware, you enter the meditative state. And when you stabilize all this and develop the daily religious routine and develop the stability of daily mindfulness, then throughout the day, you are in that meditative state. You are ever mindful, constantly meditating. That is what the Buddha meant by heedfulness. And the heedful never die. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless, and you are destined for enlightenment. And that is what meditation is all about. So everything you do in the name of meditation, it has to bring you back to heedfulness. And to be heedful is ever mindful, constantly meditating, means ever mindful, constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. That's it. Until Noble Eightfold Path factors become part of you, you hold the embodiment of these Noble Path factors, then you are a noble ones. You are very noble in all aspects of life. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, or right living. The four right effort and the right mindfulness and samadhi. All the eight, you need them to live life. And you have them all developed. They are your noble perfectness. You are very noble in your understanding of life. That's why you have right view in regards to all the nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the spiritual law, law of karma, karma niyama, then law of mind, how your mind operates, karma niyama, then law of truth, dhamma niyama. So once you have this right view, you are wise. You understand life. You understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. Then you understand who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being, how your mind, mundane mind, function, and how your true mind, the self nature, which is separate, how that one, which is just awareness, that nature, from there, it creates the mundane mind, and mundane mind creates the phenomenal world of form and consciousness. That's why the Buddha said, mano, our mundane mind. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Where mind arises, all things arise. So to understand the teaching, we must start with mind. That's why Sing Wei Kenpen in the Mahayana, Bodhidharma state that you have to start from mind. Starting from mind as your fundamental understanding, Sing Wei Kenpen. So when you look at mind, then you understand that there are two minds, because when you meditate, you come to realize, then the Buddha's teaching is very simple. He said, one is the unconditioned, your self nature. That is your true mind. But that is not a being. That one cannot come out and live. It's just a nature within. The other one is the five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects. And both aspects has the mundane mind. And the mundane mind is subject to karma. That one is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. not a reality. That's why that one is subject to change, impermanent, leading to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's empty, it's non-self. And that is the one that has the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. He said, meditation is to realize this and insight into the mundane mind to awaken to its nature, the universal characteristic, to understand it clearly that this one, without this universal characteristic understanding, the three universal characteristics awakening, you will be deceived, you will be deluded by it. And it will condition your egoic mind, your personality, to condition the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion that brings about attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, that conditions suffering. So all this, you can see them very clearly. So verse 120 is very beautiful. Yeah? Sati, samadhi, develop, wisdom will arise. And when this arise, very easy to meditate. The mental hindrance will cease. Yeah. With wisdom, all mental hindrance will cease. And the mind will be in a meditative state all the time, naturally, because no more mental hindrance. So understand this, develop the spiritual faculty. Yeah. And spiritual faculty is very simple. When you understand who the Buddha is, how great a being he is, and how wonderful is his teaching, then you will have very, very strong faith and gratitude towards the Buddha. The faith and the gratitude will become unshakable, because to have such a great being to be your teacher is really rare indeed. And you are really, really blessed, because he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. He has perfected his cultivation over a long period of birth and death. Almost four asankhaya kalpas, or great eons. So the faith, once developed, it will drive you to cultivate this teaching, where you come to realize this teaching is so beautiful. Not only this teaching can teach you the secret of life so that you understand life, it can also bring about enlightenment, awaken your mind state. Then when you become enlightened, or when your mind is awakened, it is no longer deluded. That's why you will not be deceived by the phenomenal world of form and consciousness. Then it can be at peace, it can be very beautiful, then it can live life beautifully, meaningfully. That's the reason why you can get to experience life to the fullest. You can realize all of the beauty, the pristine beauty and wonders of life. And life take a turn, become meaningful, wonderful. That everything is just the way it is. So beautiful, so meaningful, so easy to understand. With all the perfect understanding leading to the perfect life. No more agitation, no more war, no more conflict, no more misery, no more suffering, no more unhappiness. Everything become transformed, so beautiful. Yeah. And this is the beauty of the teaching, the Buddha Dhamma. That's why as Buddhists, we should learn all this, understand all this. Then when people approach us, we will be proud to be a Buddhist. Because we can explain what Buddhism is, what this teaching is. This teaching got no dogma. You don't have to believe anything. It's very scientific. You don't have to believe in an almighty God or whatever. In fact, when you realize the two mind, then you will come to know, he no you, he no me. This anatta nature, non-self nature, leading to the wisdom that penetrates the empty nature of existence. No mark of a self cultivating, no mark of others, no mark of life and dhamma within the unconditioned. Then your wisdom transform and awaken. then you will understand life beautifully. Then you will know within the conditioned world, it has its own Dhamma, its own condition, the law of karma, law of mind, law of truth. And then you can echo and flow. That's how you can live life to the fullest. You can awaken and become a noble one to live the noble life of an enlightened being. No more agitation and no more problem. Then you will know how to develop the appropriate causes and conditions for things to arise, for you to be a blessing to all, to overcome whatever situation or problem in life. And everything becomes so pristine, so beautiful, so meaningful. And with such understanding, there is clarity. You understand what life is. You understand who you are, what you are, the purpose and meaning of life. Then you can evolve whatever you want in life. Because as long as condition permit, it can manifest the perfect world. It's just like Amitabha Buddha. The vow is so powerful, it becomes part of nature's law, and he can create pure land. Do you know what is pure land? It's not within the 31 plane of existence. It's a separate existence. He called it the pure land because it is pure. And within the existence, the great beings, the enlightened beings, they are all there under different stages of cultivation. And minimum, they have the five reasons. Minimum. Bare minimum. And a lot are beyond that. And most of them are bodhisattvas. Yeah. There are a lot of Aryas too. But most of them are bodhisattvas. That's why that pure land is very different. It's very conducive for cultivation. For development of experiences. Even though they take birth in pure land and develop the understanding, but they have to come back to the 31 plane to actually develop more understanding, to evolve their wisdom. Because it's only in the 31 plane of existence where you can test yourself, find out. Not until you come to the 31 plane of existence to take birth, you can never learn the Four Noble Truth. The Four Noble Truth start with suffering, dukkha. The Noble Truth of dukkha. You can only see them in the 31 plane. Yeah. Especially the sensual realm. Yeah. The human realm. That's why all Sammasambuddha, they always take birth in the human realm. Why? Because this is the realm where they have this mano and the nature connected. And this is the run that you can see the two extremes. That's why it's called manusa. A being that has mano. That's why manusa. And this mano or mundane mind, because it's connected to the true mind, it can develop great wisdom and perfect itself to become Sammasambuddha. But if you are heedless, if you don't understand all this, the Buddha's teaching, it can lead you to eternal, not to say eternal, to the suffering realm, the four willful state. You can fall because you will become heedless. So as a human being, you can either on one extreme become a Sammasambuddha, or on the other extreme, you land yourself into avijja hell. Not eternal hell, avijja hell. Avijja hell is one of the worst hell realms where you suffer a lot, where the suffering is unending. And hell beings suffer. They are the worst of the four woeful states. There's some where they commit that type of karma, they will go down for very long until by the time they come out to become Peta, still within the woeful state, but out of the hell realm, they got no more relative or friend. Like that story on Sakyamuni relate King Bimbisara's time. Then also you check the what Unisa Dharani. Unisa Dharani. I think Sui has shared with the youth. Huh? You didn't share with the Kayamita Guru other story. You send later, huh? You all read. If you don't take care of karma, I tell you, you read the Unisa Dharani Sutta. The karmic offense is so severe, and you need this type of dharani to help you come out. That's why this type of dharani is very powerful. It seems it started from Maha Virochana Buddha, the first original Sammasambuddha that perfected the Sammasambuddhahood. Sambhogaya Kaya, the first original one. That's why they call it the Maha Virochana Buddha. And after him, the other Sammasambuddha all came. So it seems this dharani was started by him together with all the other Tathagata, where there is no other being that has this parami that can transform your coming. One of the stories, I think, is transform the father's coming. The father is supposed to go down very severe. But because the son chant for many, many years. So initially he got the incomplete one. The effect already so great. But later on when he got the complete one from somebody else, the moment he chant, within that short period, we have the father later on manifest as a king of devas, I think. Sakawat came down and met the son and said, "Do you know who I am?" The son said, "I don't know." He said, "I'm your father." He said, "Thank you so much." He said, "Ever since you start chanting that one and share Mary and transfer Mary to me, I have karma or hell rhyme and all those things. I avoided all those coming negativity. Then I was able to slowly, slowly transform and become the king of devas." Then the father told him, "I don't know what happened. Recently, it's even more powerful. Now, because he got the complete one, he chant, he can see the effect of it. So powerful. So this is the dharani that can give you faith in developing the cultivation. If you know how to cultivate them, chant them with sincerity and understanding, the efficacy, the potential capacity and ability of this dharani, they are very powerful. It's just like the Maha Karuna dharani, Ta Bei Zhou, or they call it the Great Compassionate Mantra, where all the 88 fantastic manifestation of Kuan Yin, you chant all the names together. Kuan Yin is already very unique, very special being. But this 88 manifestation that she took birth during those segmented life, they actually achieve and perform great love and compassion. And their life is very, very powerful and very rich. That's the reason why Kuan Yin finally, when he come out with a mantra, Great Compassion Mantra, means this 88 manifestation beings nature at that time, which is the nature, he combined them all into one powerful mantra. That's why it's called the Great Compassionate Mantra, Ta Bei Zhou. And that Ta Bei Zhou is very powerful, where it's full of compassion, full of love, and the vibration, the efficacy, very powerful, very different. So cultivation can come in many forms. We don't have to worry whether it's Theravada or Mahayana or Vajrayana. As long as you understand, make use of whatever that can help you. That's why I have an open mind. Do not simply comment when you don't have the understanding. Because Theravada has its advantage and limitation. So if you were to be rigid and focus only on those sutta and the teaching without understanding. But if you understand Theravada's teaching, it's very powerful. It can also understand all Mahayana teaching, I tell you. There is the part people don't understand. But Theravada teaching was limited because they become orthodox, rigid. They don't want to change. They go and follow the commentator, the interpretation of it, and they keep themselves in that way. Anything not sure, chop. Don't want to have anything to do with it. But my nature comes this line, I start with Theravada, you know. And when I penetrate Theravada, I penetrate the Mahayana teaching. And it's no different. From Anicjang Dukkhang Anatta, I understand Sunyata. I penetrate. No different. So don't go and differentiate. The teaching is the same. It's only one teaching, the truth, Dhamma. But Mahayana evolved it, have many more skillful means and understanding. But Mahayana also, like Theravada, has its limitation. And also has its, of course, the good side. The good side is a lot. They expanded on the teaching. They open up the teaching. And they have great beings that penetrate the Bodhisattva way and came out with great teachings. But the way they teach limits Mahayana from becoming so effective, the efficacy. I realize Mahayana teaching, there is no basic Theravada foundation. Theravada is actually the foundation, the basic essential Dhamma teaching. That one I realize is not really totally missing in Mahayana, but not emphasized. They have the sutta, but not emphasized. The emphasis is on the esoteric teaching. All the fantastic sutta, diamond sutta, heart sutta, and all those are very esoteric in nature, in the sense that they are very proud of their mysticism and all those things. Like the very deep, profound teaching. But as I always say, all this higher teaching, the Mahayana sutta, like the Diamond Sutta, the Heart Sutta, the Surangama Sutta, and even all the other very famous sutta. They are in fact teaching for enlightened beings. Only enlightened beings can understand. If you are not enlightened, they are only words. So if you study Mahayana in a knowledge way, you go and commit to memory all the famous Kong An or whatever teaching that they share, like the flag and the wind and all those things, you repeat all those knowledge, it doesn't mean you have the understanding. That the understanding is not there. The true understanding is when you understand the foundation of the Buddha's teaching. Then from the foundation, which is actually the Theravada's essential Dhamma, because they are very authentic. Because later on, I realized as it moved up, Mahayana, some of the essential Dhamma run, the teaching run, and they don't give emphasis to the essential Dhamma, I realized. Yeah. Their emphasis is always on the sutta that the Theravada never heard of. Yeah. But this sutta actually is just an expansion on the teaching. It's nothing really esoteric or whatever. When you understand, you look at it, you realize it is from the basic fundamental teaching of Theravada, the essential Dhamma, that spin off all this understanding. So when you have that understanding, you realize the two teaching is actually one, different. That's why, don't go and argue. Have an open mind. Listen. Develop the understanding, then make use of whatever you can to cultivate, to progress. Look for similarity. Look for things that are useful, that you can understand and transform you and move forward. So avoid division, avoid argument, avoid trying to be right, and avoid pointing finger. Otherwise, Buddhism will deteriorate. It will not flourish. It will not grow. You look at Mahayana, it's the same. After Bodhidharma come, the second patriarch, the third patriarch, the fourth patriarch, they actually suffer. You look, read through the history. Only the fifth patriarch, life become better. Society starts to accept all this. Then the sixth patriarch came, meaning he transformed the whole of Maya understanding and teaching. Well, his three hallmark of his teaching, he is very direct. He take you direct to the true mind. That's why his first hallmark is no thought, wu nian. And that is your true mind. Why you want to waste time on thought-based meditation, method and technique? Then finally only realize true mind. Why not go there direct? That's why he says silence your mind. Realize that there are two minds. And don't waste time on all the method, technique, and meditation object and all those things. You don't need them. If you understand what the Buddha teaches, like just now I explained, the five spiritual faculties, when they are there, the mental hindrance is gone, you are in the meditative state. You will straight away realize the true mind. That's how it transforms Mahayana, and Mahayana flourish after this experience. Then his second hallmark is even more powerful. He said, instead of just anatta, emptiness, sunyata, he said, you must realize no mark. No mark within mark. Mark is for the conditioned world, existential world. Within the existential world, the what they call mundane rhyme. There is mark of a living being, mark of self cultivating, mark of others, and mark of Dhamma, and mark of life. But when you realize true emptiness within the unconditioned, all this does not exist. It's just like the Heart Sutta, Zhen Kong Miao Yu. In true emptiness, there is no form of a truth. He no you, he no me. No one born, no one die, no one sick, no one attained. No one enlightened. No. Everything is in the negation. So he said the second hallmark of his teaching is after you realize no thought, you silence your mind, you develop the meditation, you insight into phenomena, then you realize there is no being inside. There is no being inside you cultivating. But this one is the five aggregate of form and mind, impermanent, dependent, originating. And this one is not real. This is not you. This one is a living being. It's subject to karma, karmically conditioned, connected to your nature. You only have to understand that, is it? That's why when you understand that there is no mark of a self-cultivating, your evil root is gone. Your self-delusion is gone. They collapse. Then you can develop all the perfection, the cultivation, without worrying about dying. Old age, sickness, and death pertain to the physical body, nothing to do with you. The aggregates of mind, they are impermanent, leading to suffering, empty, non-self. When you understand, you will know how to use them. The vehicle and the tool means the human being. We have a physical body, it's like a vehicle that takes us around. Our mind, the mundane mind, is our tool to enable us to live life. So use them. Don't attach and cling onto them deludedly. Don't go and believe that it belongs to you. Otherwise, you will suffer when you cannot get what you want. Then when you believe it's you, you worry about it getting old, getting sick and down. Then when you cling onto feeling, you think feeling is real. Feeling is you, you will be deceived. So the aggregates of mind, all this is when you meditate, see them clearly. see them that these are only marked within the existential world, the conditioned world. Within the unconditioned, there is no mark. There is no such thing as a living being. There is no mark of self-cultivating, no mark of others, and no mark of Dhamma and life. Then you will have no suffering. Your mind can transcend. That's why you can come and live life to the fullest without delusion, without ignorance, without suffering. Because when you understand the no mark nature of all things, there is no one there to suffer, to be deluded, to be deceived. Then even after enabling the wisdom to give rise to the second hallmark understanding, there is another level that you can go. Hui Ning say you can realize no dwelling. And that one is the Bodhisattva world. That one can only arise when your mundane mind collapses. Then your true nature shine forth. Your Buddha nature, your self nature, that one shine forth. Then you are ever mindful, constantly meditating, and the mind is just away. No dwelling. That's why throughout the day is phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without a center. It does not dwell. It does not stay somewhere. It does not cling. It does not hold. That mind, it doesn't dwell at all. It just leaves. It just away. Finish. That's how the three hallmarks transform the whole understanding of Mahayana. And Mahayana become very famous. That's why it flourished for so long. But over the years, it degenerate again. Because people focus on the Six Patriya Platform Sutta teaching. But there are so many exchanges between the lay people, the lay disciple and the master. Then they cling on to this like special teaching, esoteric teaching. They can chant to you. No thought, no mark, no dwelling. Wu nian, wu xiang, wu zhu. You go to the that spiritual trip that we went, the Six Patriya Platform Sutta. You follow the sutta, all the places where he was born and he went and cultivate and ordained and all those things. All those temples we went to, everywhere you can see on the pillar there, the three hallmarks of Hui Ning. His teaching. That's why that one is the blueprint, the essence, the most important teaching. And because of that, Mahayana flourish. And with that, you can explain everything about the universe. That's why it's a universal teaching. You don't have to believe anything. It's very scientific. It stand up to investigation. And it is so complete because the five pancha niyama that governs life and existence, they are clearly expounded by the Buddha. And when you understand this five universal order, you understand the secret of life. You know how to live life. Because these are the things that governs all of existence. Even the scientists, when they understand the first two laws, two niyama and bija niyama, they progress so fast. Civilization becomes so different. And that is just a scientific law. The Buddha is an expert in the other three spiritual law, karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma. That's why the Buddha is, in a sense, like the great scientist. Yeah? He penetrated all the spiritual law and he becomes so different, so powerful. As far as spiritual understanding is concerned, he has reached the pinnacle of it. That's why he can understand all existence, all rhyme, everything. Even during his time, science was not so advanced. But he can tell the people at that time. Where people ask him about the star up in the heaven. He said, do you know the number of stars that is up in the heaven? They are more than the sand on the Ganges River. You know how long is the Ganges River and how much sand is on the Ganges River. He at that time already knew. So he has this omniscient, all-knowing understanding. That's why that teaching is very, very complete and very scientific. So as a Buddhist, we are indeed very fortunate, very blessed, in the sense that we don't have to believe in anything to live life, to develop the understanding of life. And yet we can develop all the clear understanding to understand what is happening in this world, this universe, this existence. Then this one brings me back to one topic. Well, recently I saw on the video, there are a lot of people talking about karma and rebirth. And there are a lot of views and opinion over karma and rebirth. Some talk about reincarnation. Some talk about transmigration. Some talk about the eternal soul that transmigrate or reincarnate and all that. But the Buddha's understanding is different. Where he, through his own investigation, he come to understand rebirth is not what people think. And rebirth is a very important topic as taught in the Buddhist teaching, where the Buddha, under many sections, refer to it. But people cannot understand. But the Buddha did say, this law of karma, the spiritual law of mind, law of truth, they pertain to the existential world, like just I explained. Within the existential world, there is such a thing. There is such thing as a human being. There is such thing as relationship. There is such thing as law of karma. That's why his teaching include all this. In the five daily contemplation, he already highlighted and point out to all the cultivator, the five daily contemplation, very important to understand the first noble truth and the law of karma. The last of the five daily contemplation, the fifth contemplation, is about this law of karma. He said, we are all, regardless of whether human being or living being, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. Therefore, karma is very important. If your entire life depends on karma, because we are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and we are what we are because of, then you have to look after your karma. So when he say you, it appear that it contradict with his teaching of anatta, non-self. He know you, he know me. No one born, no one die, no one say. But there is no contradiction. When he say you here, it means your form and mind. Then in the teaching, he explained this form and mind is not real, not you. Where it's impermanent, dependent, originating, condition arising. That part people cannot understand. People get confused. That's why the argument I heard the YouTube forum teaching, sharing, they argue until the cow come home and nobody can point out the true beauty of the Buddha's teaching. And some speaker even tell you, the Buddha never put emphasis on rebirth and karma. Because they cannot understand the unconditioned and the conditioned. Both exist. You need to have the wisdom of the unconditioned and the conditioned world to have the complete complementary understanding to understand life. Otherwise, you cannot. To free your mind, you need the unconditioned Dhamma. That's why no thought, no mind, no dwelling. Then he know you, he know me. We are no mark means nothing exists. But within the conditioned world, the Buddha knew there is such thing as law of karma. There is such thing as the conditioned Dhamma that recognizes relationship. That's like the heavy karma, the five heavy karma, patricide, matricide, killing or an arahant and all that. They recognize as relationship. But the Buddha is very wise and very clear about all this. That's why he taught all this. Then when you understand all this, Then only he explained the law of dependent origination, paticca sammuppada. He said everything within this conditioned world, existential world, is dependent originating, conditioned arising, causal. No reality, not a permanent unchanging entity. He know you, he know me. That part develops the wisdom of the unconditioned. Then when you see all this clearly, then you know the form and mind, the human being, the living being is not real. That's why he said the five aggregates are impermanent. Rupang anicang, rupang anatta, vedana anicang, vedana anatta. Because they are impermanent, they are non-self, they are empty. Then in the Mahayana teaching is the same. When Kuan Yin Bodhisattva was investigating the Prajnaparamita, means perfection of wisdom teaching, when he was investigating, he illuminated on the five skanda, means using his wisdom mind, he illuminated. Then he realized they are all empty. Wu yun jie kong. Zao jian wu yun jie kong. And when he realized that they were all empty, he crossed. He go beyond all suffering. That's how you develop the wisdom of the unconditioned and awaken. So if you don't understand this, you will argue until the cow come home. Then they were trying to explain how can we actually promote Buddhism, bring Buddhism forward. And they focus on Theravada Sutta. There was one forum I realized. They say, going forward. There's a Latin word I forgot already. Theravada. So all this, we can actually overcome the problem. We can explain them in clear term with understanding, so that as Buddhists, we can be proud of the Buddha's teaching. We can actually bring forth the understanding to let the Buddha Dharma flourish again, arise again. So in this golden era, if more and more cultivator and living being understand the true teaching, the real teaching, then our problem of having all these things persists. Because all of the division and argument that we have that bring Buddhism to this level of misery need not happen. Buddhism can rise again. The Dhamma can rise again when there is understanding, true understanding. His teaching is very beautiful. Like I said, no need to believe anything. No dogma, nothing. Can be understood by all. And how birth take place, people don't understand. The Buddha understand. And you are a cultivator, you are a meditator, you can also understand. No need to wait till death to see all this. That's why Nibbana can be realized before you die. Because this Dhamma is very unique. It's not only sandhitical, it's akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. Can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. So all these are very beautiful. Okay, so I think we will finish out with that verse 120. Then we move on to verse 121. Unique Dhamma code 121. Sense restraint born of understanding is very profound. So this one we have gone through. When you have developed the unisoka manasikara, initial wisdom, that sense restraint is automatic. So sense restraint must be born of wisdom, understanding. If it's born of wisdom and understanding, it is very profound. Where it's not suppression. You restrain because you have wisdom. You don't restrain because you want to suppress your anger, thinking that anger is the evil root. You must not have them. You must not get angry. Then you go and suppress them. That type of restraint is without wisdom. That is with delusion. That's why sense restraint, born of wisdom, understanding, is very profound. It's not blindly suppressing things, controlling things, and bottling up one's emotion without being aware of the evil roots that cause the internal conflict within itself. That's why without understanding and wisdom, you cannot free your mind. You become like deluded, gullible. You go and suppress, control, and you bottle up all your fear, your anger, your unhappiness. Because the thought tells you, these are evil root, root of all evil. As a cultivator, you must not get angry. You cannot get angry. So where does the problem lies? The problem lies in your delusion. Because you are not aware. These are evil roots. Roots of all evil that condition you into negativity. And these evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, which include your fear, your anger, your hatred, they are impermanent, like the Buddha said. They are not yours. Anger is not you. Fear is not you. All the emotion is not you. That's where they get themselves confused, deluded. They grasp, they cling. Because they saw. They say, I saw my anger. That is delusion. How can anger be you? You just investigate. And I will teach you how to investigate. I ask you two questions, you will understand. Before you get angry, was there any anger? Anger was never there. Isn't it? Then how did you get angry? It's through your senses. When you see something, hear something, or think of something that you don't like, then you reacted. You get angry. So anger is condition arising, causal phenomenon. Then when it arrives, after some time, the condition no more, it ceases to be there. If anger is you, you should die with it, isn't it? Because when anger ceases, you should die, isn't it? How come you didn't die? So how can anger be you? Please, wake up. Don't be deceived. Don't be deluded anymore. If anger is not me, then why am I going to worry about anger? Why I want to suppress my anger? Why I want to control my anger? I have to develop the wisdom to understand that anger is an evil root. Even though not me, but it's an evil root and it will make my mundane mind evil. See that clearly. Then you don't have to suppress anger. Then you ask yourself, your life, is that the way you want to live your life? The Buddha already said, the three evil roots are the roots of all evil. If they arise in your mind state, you become evil. You will break your precept. Evil condition, wrong thought, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation. Your life, to be happy or to be miserable is entirely your choice. Don't tell me you don't know how to choose. You choose to be heedless, arise the evil root and become miserable. Then it's up to you. If I were you, if I understand this teaching, I will never allow anger to arise. That's why there are five ways to abandon it. The third way, wisdom way. The fourth way, trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse it. All these are in the teaching. But people don't understand. They cling, they attach, they grasp, and they become entangled. That's why this verse 121 is very important, unique Dhammakoda. I read again. Sense restraint. Born of understanding is very profound. Means you must have this wisdom, initial understanding. Then sense restraint is automatic because that wisdom will free you. So it is not just blindly suppressing and controlling or bottling out of your emotion without being aware of the evil. Because you think they belong to you. Anger is you. That's why you suppress it. You say, I'm a cultivator. These are evil, rule all you, I must not have it. So you go and suppress it. You go and control your emotion. You bottle it up. You don't want to get angry. You pretend that you are enlightened. Understand? People scold you also. You yarn. You are actually suppressing, controlling. And that is not Dhamma. That is delusion. That is being gullible. So when you are not aware, not attentive, in inability to see the evil root, because you don't understand what constitutes evil, then you can land yourself into such situation. You become gullible. You are trapped in delusion, self-delusion. Then all this are the cause of your internal conflict within yourself. That condition, your self-delusion, that leads to all the suffering, the misery. So see all this in the meditation, daily mindfulness. Understand them, reflect, contemplate. Then meditation becomes easy. My life. The evil root, I supposed to train my mind to be ever mindful to see it, to understand what constitutes evil. Then when I realize there is selfishness in me, there is anger in me, these are dependent originating, not my real mind state. And they arise because of self-delusion, wrong view. So what I need to do is straighten my view. The moment I straighten my view, I got no more problem with that. Then why must I suppress, control, and do all those funny things? Understand? Why must I say cut a feeling? Who cut? The thought want to cut. The thought which is egoic without wisdom, how to cut? The moment you have wisdom, you will not touch it. Understand? It cannot arise. But these are evil, root of all evil. I hold the key to my own life destiny. I see so clearly. This is what enlightenment is all about. I have awakened to it. And I will never go back to the old way. Because this will condition karmic negativity, bring about suffering, downfall. And I harm myself, I harm others. This is not the way to live life. This is delusion. Lead to misery, suffering, conflict, the lack of peace. That's how the world becomes what it is. They lack this teaching, they lack this understanding. And this teaching is not difficult. You only need to be heedful, mindful. You can see all this. Then when you see all this, you wake up. All along, living being has been like that. That's why they suffer. That's the reason why the Buddha under third noble truth is that suffering need not be when you understand his teaching. Enlightenment in the here and now, Nibbana can be realized. And it's so beautiful. And when you know that, any Tom, Dick, and Harry, or even kid also will know how to choose. Choose to be happy, not to be miserable. So hopefully with this explanation, it will awaken you and will really make you awake. Don't sleep anymore. Okay, the next one, also very beautiful. That's why today I want to go through page 34 again. Only wisdom free, nothing else. Remember that. Not all your fantastic meditation, your psychic, your ability to fly, levitate, read mind, all this doesn't help. Only wisdom free your mind, nothing else. Wisdom is an understanding which is not rigid. Wisdom is not a knowledge. Wisdom is having right understanding or right view with regards to all the nature's law that governs life and existence within the existential world, especially the three spiritual law of karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. So this one we have covered, very beautiful. Then verse, unique code 1, 2, 3. Having wisdom will enable one to have right view and right understanding, to accept the reality of the present moment and not to be attached to anything. So this one very easy to understand, very straightforward. Like the Buddha say, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions. If all the causes and conditions are really set, means this is the reality. Thing is just the way it is. It has to be like that. Cannot be otherwise. Like COVID-19, the condition fall into play, arise already. Let it unfold. Don't resist it. Observe, understand, and take care. Stay safe. Do your part. Don't go and spread rumor and create negativity. That is what the teaching is all about. So, understand. Then you will be free. So wisdom will enable you to have this right understanding and right view to accept the reality of the present moment, not to attach to anything, not to project your thought, not to go and worry, and not to go and kepo and do all those things. Okay? So the next one, eh? Page 35. Unicode 124. This one is very beautiful. The true mind never dies. Our spiritual nature grows with wisdom. As you cultivate, as you connect, as you develop your perfection of virtue and wisdom, your spiritual nature grows because more and more understanding unfolds. That the true mind never dies. I never use the word your true mind. Eh? You realize or not? The true mind never dies. This one. That one is not a being. That one is just an awareness nature. You know what is a nature? Karmic nature. Summation of all. Becoming your nature. So that true mind is not a being. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. It's unconditioned. It's just an awareness nature. That nature. And that is the first thing to come up from our oneness nature or Buddha nature or the source. And this is the one that is responsible for the creation of all things. The mundane mind, the phenomenal world of consciousness and form. So from here, everything arises. To here, everything return. So when you understand this self-nature, the true nature, the true mind, you will understand life. You will understand meditation. Then you will understand the Buddha's teaching. Everything is just dependent, originating, condition arising, causal. When you are aware, silent, you saw all this manifestation, all the phenomena, how they arise, how they continue to exist, sustain, then the passing away. And when you observe with a silent mind, you start to understand its characteristic, its universal characteristic. Then you start to understand the Buddha's teaching, so beautiful. Yeah, everything is like that, dependent, originating, conditional. No condition, nothing happens. When condition arrive, things arise. It's like without the senses, without the consciousness trapped inside, without the form and mind coming, nothing happened. But when this come, because of the three conditions, yeah, you need a physical body, you need a consciousness through the rebirth consciousness, then you need the life force. These three conditions animate it into a living being. And this living being is dependent originating. Well, these three things must be there. The life force, the karmic force. The life force is actually the karmic force. Then the consciousness from the rebirth one that become more and more complicated over time. Then the physical body must be in order. When these three things are in order, it animates into a human being, a living being. Then you think this is you. You think this is real. That's where the delusion is. But this is dependent originating, supported by the three conditions. Like your heartbeat stop, means what? Your life force stop, your karmic force stop, destructive karma. The form am I, no more. It ceases to be. You say dead already, no more heartbeat. So when your organs are damaged, the vital organ, it cannot support the consciousness. Again, the consciousness has to separate. There's a separation of form and mind. Is what you call death, the human being. Then even the life force continue, it cannot pump the heart anymore. The organ is damaged, like the heart attack. The heart muscle all fail away, shut down already. How to pump? Understand? Huh? Like your pump. Huh? Everything inside there, the part all fail already. The current still there. The pump cannot pump anymore. Understand? So the life force also no use. So it realized all the three conditions must exist for it to arise. Then you saw how it arises. You can even see how you die before you die. How the consciousness can come out actually. When I was young, it happened. That's what I can see. I saw the craving force dissipate. Then all consciousness come back to one. Then it leave this body. Then I was able to see myself up there. Then later on, how I came back. I actually died. Yeah, when I came back, I realized I was not connected to my physical body. Then I don't know what happened. It's like I had this understanding. I know how to give it a push. Then I went in. And I gained control of my body. That time I was only about 10 years old. And my brother actually walked in and say those things. And I saw him when I was up there, my consciousness, the random of consciousness. We call it whatever that is inside. That come out. So that one saw him. Then when I gained back control, I straight away ran out and asked my brother, did you went in and say all those things? My brother told me, yes, is it? But how can you know? You were sleeping like a log there. Cannot even move. Like a dead body. I said, don't worry. I just want to know that I'm not dreaming. Means I actually came out. And I knew I came out because I cannot go into the body. And when I gave it a push and I went into this body, I realized connected again. That's why I came out and confirmed to make sure. But actually, on hindsight, no need to confirm. Because how can it be a continuous thing? We are in that state until I gain control. There was continuity. It was not a dream. I was there. And I saw how my consciousness went back. Then how I become alive again. But when I went in, I was not connected. You know what happened or not? The consciousness inside, but not connected to this body. Because the two are separate. Then I had to give it a push. Nobody taught me, but I know what to do. Pow, I went in. Maybe not meant to die yet. Maybe Kuan Yin's nature helping, I don't know. That's how I went in. Then I become alive again. Otherwise I would have been dead. Otherwise you all wouldn't be seeing me. And that was, I was only 10 years old, 1964. So all this, when you have gone through with the meditation and the understanding, you will know what consciousness is. You will know what the mundane mind is. You know what awareness is. So you will understand all this very clearly. Yeah? So we move on. Huh? The true mind never dies because it's not a being. It's a awareness nature. Whereas our spiritual nature is always there. It will grow, continue to grow in wisdom. Means through your perfection. Your perfection of virtue, wisdom, and understanding. Then verse, or not verse, unique quote 125. Enlightenment can only be realized if one can transcend duality through wisdom. Transcending good and evil, birth and death, right and wrong, etc. When wisdom arises, self-delusion or ignorance, that condition craving is no more and it cannot arise. So enlightenment is about having wisdom to transcend duality. When you transcend duality, you are always at peace. Well, to you, there is no more right and wrong, good and bad, good and evil. There is no more division. That's why when you see things as they are, your mind remains at peace. It will not stir. It will not keep all. It will have its sensation and its feeling. But you know them for what they are. Conditions like that, things will be like that. Like pain, numbness, and all those things. When I am not relaxed enough, when the chi cannot flow, then it causes a constriction. Then that sensation, tactile sensation, will give rise to that type of sensation. If I don't label it, it's not a hindrance. The moment I label it and develop aversion towards it and dislike that sensation, then it becomes a mental hindrance. So all this understanding will free you. Then even though you are trapped in a form of mind, and you know this form of mind is not you, but you will know how to live. You will know how to go through life. things that you need to endure, you will endure with wisdom. You will not go against nature. Condition like that, things will be like that. It's just like you live life. When you walk by some places where there is some foul smell, maybe rotten thing or whatever, because your physical body has the senses, you are nearby, you will pick it up. Then when you pick it up, you got two choices. React to it and become miserable. That's cold. Who's a stupid fellow? Simply pollute this place, throw this there. The reality is you are nearby. Condition is that your senses will pick it up. And how you respond when you smell it depends on your wisdom. If you can transcend reality, means what? You have wisdom. Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things bring like that. That's why I remember during the early days after 1989 when I had the understanding. Even when I walk out, because we have Pasar Malam here, I think every Thursday is the other side. Here is Monday. So you know Pasar Malam, a lot of store, the good food, the smell, the taste very nice. Understand? So I pass by, then this sense come to me. Then because of the mindfulness and the awareness, I just smile. It's up to me how I want to sense it. I understand. Condition like that, things will be like that. So like good food, if there's condition to have, I will have it. Good smell, I will smell. That unpleasant smell also, I won't be agitated. We have condition like that, things will be like that. Unless you think by inhaling it, it will pollute your breath. And then you try to avoid it. That's how we have sometimes poison gas. And then you try to avoid. But no need to have aversion towards it. But if it's good smell, doesn't bring about harm, that is your good karma. Understand? You can experience it. Experience it. Use this. Tighten it. Yeah, Sui, you want to say something?
I think unpleasant smell is also something we program in our minds.
Take,
for example, chow tau fu smell.
Yeah.
Some people program as very nice. Some people program as not
you
nice.
You will like it. Like the chow tau, petai. It's the same. Some people like, some people don't like. So it's the conditioning. What is important is when there is wisdom, the conditioning will not condition you into negativity or mind state. That is the wisdom part, because you can transcend duality. Transcending duality is no good, no bad, no right, no wrong. Thing is just the way it is. The senses are nearby, you will pick it up, finish. Understand now? Then how you respond depends on your understanding, your wisdom. You don't have to be miserable over what you smell. Understand now? Or you don't have to have craving over what you smell. When you smell something nice, you want to try them, you make a decision. Then you check your stomach whether you are hungry or not. If you are not hungry, you want to buy for your children, your wife, then up to you, the decision. Yeah. But there is no craving. There is condition to have, and you can have the means. You can afford it. So why not? Sometimes, understand. Things are just the way it is. You've got condition to have the good life, the good food. Why not? Leave it. I don't say enjoy it, of course. You can pamper yourself a bit. I use that word, pamper yourself a bit. It means have it. What's wrong with that? But sometimes when we travel, we also have to be considerate. Like spiritual trip and all those things. So sometimes I need to talk to the organizer and all those things and tell you. Because not everybody like us can have the means, can afford. Then we go for good hotel, good food. But those who cannot really afford, they may not be able to join us. So we have to strike a middle path or a compromise so that we are sensitive. We don't have to always have the good food. Then if certain people maybe have such problem, then they want to have better hotel and other things or single room. Then we talk to them. If you want, we can check with the organizer. You pay for the extra, then we will get it for you. Of course, provided it's not inconvenient. So we do arrange that. So it is very flexible based on understanding. Then when I travel on my own, or when I travel with people who can afford, then we will behave differently. Like sometimes I travel with Sam and family, because we can afford, we will go for things that are better, the food and everything, hotel accommodation. Then when we fly, sometimes we fly business class. Then because of my daughter's parami, she got upgraded to first class free on the way back. You ask her from London. Then she sent me the photo. Oh, I also haven't sat first class, but she has. But me and my wife, we have taken business class many times. So this is what your parami is, your karma. So it have condition. Don't go and gullibly believe what people tell you, Oh, you cultivator, you enlightened already. You cannot have craving, Having good food is a craving, Oh, go for luxurious business class and all this is a craving. This one is based on rigid view without the proper understanding. That is like I used to share. When the beings that say all this, they themselves haven't realized the awakening, the enlightenment. Then they are trying to teach the enlightened being how to live life. You shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But how do you know? Because you don't have that type of mind. When you have that type of mind, that type of wisdom, you will know. That's why I dare to tell you things that are very different. And you can find out yourself. Because this is what life is all about. Dhamma is all about. Understanding is wisdom. And understanding is not rigid. Understanding is based on that wisdom, that understanding, that know what are the causes and conditions behind and what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. It's just the understanding. That's why you can act differently under different circumstances, different conditions. You don't have to be rigid. You don't have to say, oh, next time when we travel, we must travel on that. It depends on the situation, the condition. And when you are with parameters who are very simple, very down to earth, you can also be very simple and very down to earth. It's not difficult. That's why when I earlier on go for spiritual trip, whether Thailand or Australia or wherever that I go. Especially my first trip to, I brought my whole family in 1992 or what, to Australia to visit Ajayantra, my teacher, Katina. We stay at Belbert Farm. You ask my wife and my children. It's a farm, outskirt of Sydney, 500 kilometers away, at night, minus 6 degrees. And when I came back, my classmate and my office colleague asked me, oh, you went to Australia with your whole family. You enjoy the trip or not? How to tell people? Actually, if people who don't understand, it's suffering, it's misery. But I have the Dhamma. I enjoy it despite the condition and all those things. And we can endure, very simple. No proper toilet, no problem. Got mosquito, got snake, got everything. We also went through it. And at night it was so cold. And that was the first trip overseas. And I didn't know at that time there was no modern clothing, like now Uniqlo, the heat tuck and all things, the tintin. Last time we don't know, you go and buy all those heavy, thick wool and all those things. Then I realized minus 6 are not thick enough. So luckily they arrange a fire. I think the gas on that spray out the fire. You remember in the kitchen area? So that one gives some heat. But I was not so fortunate because I cannot join them in the kitchen. I was actually invited by Ram and he was very kind. He got a cabin. He arranged one bed for me in the same cabin. He sleep one bed, I sleep one bed. So I was very grateful, very thankful, very cold, but I know how to silence my mind. I know how to meditate. Then I don't feel it. Then early morning, I realized they wake up very early, 3, 4 a.m. Then I hardly sleep. Because that time I was fully aware, mindful. Then I saw him get ready, go out. Then I also get ready, go out. Then I saw them sitting in a campfire around, very big circle there. So I also joined them. So when I joined them, you know what happened? There's one dog. That dog is a very special dog. They call him a Dhamma dog. He always go and sit under Achayantra's meditation cabin. He will stay there. Then that morning, he came. He went to Ramananda there. Then after that, when I came out, the moment I sat down there, you know what happened? That dog came to me. Then I can feel, because I have metta at that time, very strong. Then I read it. Then the dog came to me, where he's still. Then I can say it. Then Ramananda saw, he smiled. He smiled. Then after that, I relaxed and silent. Early 4 a.m., I think, with the center campfire, minus 6 degrees. So you think easy to endure. And not much warm clothing. First night was very cold because we arrived late, middle of the night, I don't know what. Then we don't have a chance to meet up with Ramananda because the person who took us there was a very nice Thai person. He drive all the way, I think from Bangkok after the airport we went. So we were very grateful. Yeah? Then when we reached there very late, we were put into a abandoned house, I think empty house. Then there is the traditional Western house got a fireplace on, but no firewood. No. So we had to go and gather. So that night was really cold, but we endured. Then luckily, my children still small. My wife also, I think, all the warm clothing, I said, you all used. So, but the next day, very good. When the sun rise, the weather improved. They were having fun and all those things. So these were the conditions where you need to endure. You know how to endure. You know what this thing is. So you will have the understanding. It doesn't mean that you have the means, you must enjoy or you must pamper. No, it depends on the condition. It depends on your understanding. And for me, people know me. I am very simple, very frugal too when I started. So I can actually accord and flow very easily. No matter what the condition is, there is understanding. That's why people who met up with me, see me, they know I am different. And they tend to have this good feeling when they are around with me. They feel safe. They feel like protected. So with Dhamma, all this can arise. Your understanding, your wisdom, your vibration, your nature is different. Cultivator will know. Normal human being, they will sense you. Animal will sense you. They will know. Huh? What's the time already? Find something already. Oh, I have to end. Sorry. Where was I? 1 to 4. 1 to 5. Okay, I finish 1 to 5, then we end. Enlightenment can only be realized if one can transcend duality. This one I finish, through wisdom. Means transcending good and evil, birth and death, right and wrong, etc. When wisdom arises, self-delusion ceases to be, or ignorance ceases to be. So self-delusion and ignorance will condition craving. So this one, when it ceases to be, is no more, and it can never arise again. Okay, we finish, Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Maybe I finish on 1, 2, 6. When the form and mind realizes itself and cease, it realizes Nibbana and return to the source, the original mind or the true nature or the oneness nature. So this one we finish it. Okay, sadhu. So we will end. Then we will have some maybe Q&A or reporting of meditation. Okay, we will off the recording. Eh?
Don't need to record.
Oh, sorry.
We
will continue recording, but we will
open
for question eh? Or reporting of meditation. Okay, so I have a drink. Eh? Then you all, whoever who wants to ask question or report meditation, you just come in. Eh? So today we have two physical followers. Dr. Jayanta and Ananda with me. Yeah. Pass the mic to them. Yeah. Yeah, anybody? You can just come in. Don't be shy. Anybody?
Right,
yeah,
here.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Ananda, yes.
Talks about duality, generally. I'm curious on this Theravadin. What people keep saying that I'm Theravadin, I'm Mahayana, and then I'm Vajrayana kind of thing.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a duality as well in terms of their
I will answer your question. You see, duality means the two opposite, understand? So your example of Vajrayana, Mahayana, Theravada is not a duality. There is a division, understand? They divide the Buddhist teaching into three sects. Commonly accepted is Theravada and Mahayana. So Theravada initially was Hinayana. But they become very offended when people call them the smaller vehicle. Hina is small, Yana is vehicle. Whereas Mahayana, Maha is big, the more superior of Maha vehicle. So they don't like that term. So they change it to Tera. Thera means cinema. More than 20 years ordination. They are called Theras. So they call it the orthodox teaching of the Theras. That's why it changed to Theravada. So that small vehicle gone. So that was how the origin come to be. There's a bit of history. Then this division is not a duality. This division, like I said, need not happen. But human being is very funny. Wherever there is condition and opportunity, the human mind will divide. You look at our Chinese race, it's the same. When we come out of China, our forefather and all those things, you know what happened? When you are out of China, any Chinese, overseas Chinese, is your own countryman. You from China, which part, never mind. Then we associate as Chinese. But once the Chinese become powerful, like in China, most of them Chinese, then they again divide. You Hakka, you Cantonese, you Hokkien, or Minnan, or Shanghainese, or Beijing. So all this is the selfish nature of human behavior. And culture developed from there. You get the mind back. My daughter wants to say something.
Instead of duality, then are all these kind of divisions a type of mark? The sixth patriarch says no.
Oh,
mark.
It's definitely mark, but this is worse than mark. Because this is division, causing confusion. The mark of a living being is already bad enough. Understand? That's a clarity. So from there, selfishness arises. That's why what I want to drive at is selfishness that create the division. If it's not because of selfishness, they won't divide. Why after they come out of China, they feel lonely, then they don't want to divide? We are Chinese. Understand? As long as you are Chinese, very friendly. You go association, Chinese, oh, from China, which part? Never mind, come. Register already. help you. Because selfish, you cannot survive. You fear. You need support. That's why our culture is very good. Wherever the Chinese go, they survive very well. Why? They start out with the association, the Chinese association. Then too many already, they divide into Hakka association, Liu Guanzhang, then the whatever association. And this association are very good. You know? Yeah, they come from members who has already gone over. They contribute monthly subscription. Then this association help them. New people come, they help you to settle down. Then old people, they help you to find job. They help you to like negotiate with the government or whatever. Yeah. So all this association, because of the pooling of resources and money and resources in the form of manpower, everything, when they want to do certain thing, it's very easy. So once they have the money, it's like more than one person. It's, let's say your association got 10,000 members. Each person 10 ringgit a month. 10,000 is 100,000 a month. Then you can buy shop lot, understand? Not? Don't need to take loan also can. That time shop lot is only 5,000, my father told me. Then he bought his, later on his house, he bought the medical shop, 200 ringgit to do business. Because that time money very big. So they started with this, then they evolved. So these are the good things. But when it comes to division that leads to negativity, that is bad. Like you look at our country, because of the variety of races. Then once they have racial politics, it divides, understand? And it causes a lot of conflict, misunderstanding. Then all this leads to what? Leads to argument. The newspaper sensationalizes it. And it becomes a problem. Why did it happen? They all are selfish. They want their race to rule, to control. And they come out with justification. So all this division come from selfishness, from delusion. So like my daughter said, could it be from the mark? The mark is already better now. Mark is the beginning. From the mark, you create division. And who create division? Of course, ego. But it's the thought. Understand? That's why Krishnamurti is very wise. He said, thought divide. He said, you must see the limitation of thought. This is meditation. Do you understand? Observation. You must see the limitation of thought, like I explained. Thought is limited. We are from the spacious awareness, it shrink, focus, and it become a thought. You input a content of consciousness. Then how thought divide, he said, and create all this misery, conflict, suffering. See it. Understand? This is meditation. That's why I relate to the teaching very well. I knew thought divide. Through what? Through words. And who created word? Thought. That's why concept and word come from thought. And how did thought divide? Based on your external form, they divide. Race. By virtue. Now US, the black and the white. Here also got white, got black, got in between. Then based on religious belief, divide again, religion. Understand? Then based on nationality, divide again. And how much division do you know? Religion alone, you can count, I think easily more than 10. Race alone, also easily, China is itself 40 over to 50 ethical group, Mingzhu. We don't call it dialect or race. It's all Chinese, but they subdivide into so many of these ethical, ethnic group. So all this division come from where? The thought. So when you understand thought is limited and thought divide, then why do you trust thought? Understand? Thought without wisdom is egoic. So what is thought? Thought is a tool. If I want to use thought, correctly, appropriately, I must develop wisdom. Understand or not? That the user of thought is very important. If the user of thought is deluded, evil, thought become deluded and evil. That's how wrong thought arises. But if the user of thought is enlightened, have wisdom, thought become right thought, following Noble Eightfold Path, then thought become wholesome, virtuous, conducive for life, can be a blessing to all. That's how Dhamma, through observation, through understanding, understand the danger of thought. Before you have wisdom, try not to use thought. Do good before you are enlightened. Good according to you, relative good. Good according to you is based on your views, opinion, and conditioning and belief system. Understand? Whatever that concur with these views, opinion, and conditioning is right. But right according to you. Your right is selfish, especially when it comes to your children. When you scold your children, boy, don't do that. That is bad for you. Bad for you according to who? The parent. Understand? But according to the children, it's bad for the children. But the parent, kiasu, don't care. I'm your parent. No. You say, I eat salt more than you eat rice. So how to argue with this type of tradition and authority? Understand? This is what the deluded mind is capable of. They use it to justify their own selfishness, their own delusion. So when you are a cultivator, when you are a meditator, when you have wisdom, when you have mindfulness awareness, you are supposed to observe and see all this. How all these things cause confusion, delusion, suffering, misery, conflict, and problems of the world. Then you wake up. The world need not be this way. Understand? Why should I divide? That's why in the early days, when people ask me, am I a Buddhist? I never answer. You know why? I say, I started with Buddhism. I never answer, I'm a Buddhist. Do you know why? If you label yourself a Buddhist, actually for people who don't understand, you become violent. Do you know why? You create division, understand? Because your Buddhist is the concept of Buddha, Buddhist. Believe in rebirth. Whatever that is different from this, conflict already, understand? You say wrong. You want to? They call glorify your religion. You want to protect your religion. So you argue. Buddha say no God. Why do you believe in God? But you cannot defend because you don't have the real understanding of Buddhism. That's why I don't want to say I'm a Buddhist. But Krishnamurti used these words. Whenever you label yourself as any religious belief or sect, you are violent. Then you start to divide. Understand? Why must you divide? All of religion claim to have the truth. Understand? It's relative. Your truth, my truth, is relative truth, not important. Why should we argue? Understand? But there is only one truth in nature, understand? One aspect. Truth is. That's why he used this word. Truth is. The isness of thing. So when truth is, means what? Whatever that concur with nature's law, that is the truth. Whatever that can explain the way things are is the truth. True or not? So if that is the truth, then your truth, my truth are all without meaning. Correct or not? It is relative truth. Truth according to you. Truth according to me. But if you can speak the truth and explain to me the way things are following nature's law, I know you have the understanding. Then no need to call yourself a Buddhist or what. That's why to be polite, I say, I started from Buddhism. That is the best way to answer. I never want to say I'm a Buddhist, I'm a one. Because the teaching that I teach, do you think is only Buddhism? it is actually the whole thing is Dhamma. The Buddha never teach Buddhism. He teach Dhamma. But when he's the Buddha, they add in the ism at the back. And Buddhism has been distorted until it's no longer the Buddha's teaching. Well, the Buddha's teaching is about truth, universal truth, noble truth. If it's the truth, Dhamma, it can explain the way things are. No argument, no belief, no dogma. That's why it's very universal. Concur with scientific discovery. It never becomes obsolete. That is the beauty of the Dhamma. That is the wonder of the Buddha's teaching. But people forgot all this. And they are so eager to divide themselves into Buddhists. Yeah. And within Buddhists, divide some more. Mahayana, Theravada, Vajrayana. Then do you know within Theravada how many divisions they divide? They got the one Burma one. Myanmar one. And Myanmar got so many. Mahasi, Saidong. The other one is what? Pa'au. That one, that day I forgot the name. Pa'au. The one, the two of you. Then you got Upakim. You got this Upakim's disciple Song went and follow on. He got a lot of international setup one. What is his name? A very famous guy also. I cannot remember. Never mind. Divide into so many, you know. Oh. Then you can go Thailand. Also divide into so many. Achan Man tradition, not so bad, the forest monk. Then you got the city monk. Then you got the one that follow the official government one. The some that Sangharaja and all. Then you got the outlaw one. And there are so many. Then you heard of Long Po Tien, the dynamic meditation and all those things. Then you heard of Buddha. Then you heard of many other Kamatangha, the Long Po, Long Po Sok, Sama Arahang and all those things. So many divisions. Maybe Ananda, you are not exposed. But what I want to share with you is the danger of division. Because truth or the Dhamma is only one aspect. Why should we divide? It's because of the human mind, born of selfishness, delusion, that creates division. So meditation is to have this mindfulness and awareness to observe all this and to understand how problem arise, how conflict arise, how division is so detrimental to our society's evolution and life. How society suffer, how humanity, mankind suffer because of division. And division is worse than duality. Duality is for the spiritual beings to transcend. Duality has two types. The Buddha under Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the opening statement, avoid the two extremes. That is the first duality. Do you know what is the two extremes? You don't know. Self-mortification and sensual indulgence. One extreme belief in torturing the body. He said, because we have negative karma. So if we torture our physical body, we take the karma. You torture long enough, all the bad karma taken, you become enlightened. That is wrong view. He said, both also must avoid. Well, the Buddha went through self-mortification. He realized cannot bring about enlightenment. So he said, you avoid it. The other one is indulge in the senses. Don't want to train your mind. Don't want to meditate. Don't want to go and find out. Don't want to investigate. Then enjoy life. So sensual indulgence and self-motivation, you have to avoid the two extremes. But the deeper meaning of the second aspect of the duality is to transcend. The two extremes is to transcend duality. This is the yin-yang teaching. Yin Yang is Lao Tzu. Understand? Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu. Where you say the whole universe is based on Yin and Yang. There is duality within the universe. So heaven and hell is a duality. Understand? Then Tian Ti is also a duality. Do you understand? Good and bad, right and wrong, pleasant and unpleasant, wholesome and unwholesome. These are all duality. So duality is what Lao Tzu teach. The Buddha also teach, but he say in Pali. He said, imas means sati idang hoti. When this arise, that arise. The meaning is very deep, isn't it? When I create one side, the duality, opposite side, arise. If I say this is good or this is right, means what? Whatever that is not this, manifests, isn't it? That's why the duality come about. So when you create duality, when you have right, the wrong is automatic. Then how do you transcend them? You cannot. You will argue, understand? Not? Because right is relative. Right and wrong is relative. Right according to you, different. Right according to him, different. Understand? Not? So duality lead to, like Krishnamurti find out, all this leads to division, leads to conflict. And created by who? The thought. Through words, through concept, through idea. Idea of world peace. He always say, we talk about peace, but everybody is talking about idea. Means their own formula of peace. Like America. Peace according to them, except. Peace according to you, they won't agree. Understand? Well, their concept of peace is America first. It's American interest. So whatever that don't have American interest is not the type of peace he want. So to them, he can have nuclear weapon, no. If other people have is a threat to the world and him, no, you must dismantle. That is the type of peace that he talk about. So you look at all their policy, it's based on selfishness. It's based on their personal and all. So you look at the world, you observe with the silent mind, with the understanding, then you realize all this need not be. Why must the world divide like that? Because they are the number one superpower. They pull those things through. And recently, it become more obvious. You saw the video. When Hong Kong people demonstrate all the things, they say this is democracy. This is human right. You cannot use arm against them. You cannot use threat and force against them. But now, because of that Josh something died, the black, the police brutality and the racial thing, there they say they are thugs. 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 The moment you look, you say, you start to look, we will start to shoot. They want to bring in the army, all those things. He said, these people are causing riots. They don't call them freedom democracy protester. They don't talk like when they comment on the Hong Kong people. Oh, they even pass law in their Senate. And now, Senate is not saying anything. Only a few governors dare to come out and criticize the civil judiciary. Which is still until now not resolved, very racial and all those things. So society will have this problem when they continue to divide through the thought, through words, through concept, through idea. That's an ideology kill. You cannot have ideology. Whatever is the truth is the truth. Why must there be ideology? Why must you say communism is the best? Why must you say democracy is the best? Why must you say Marxism is the best? All these ideas. You look at China. It went now because it took communism. Then later on they realize whatever you take also bring about downfall. Because it's the way the world is. The best democracy also has its problem. Then he realized every of this government has its problem. So you know what Deng Xiaoping did? He is very wise. He came out with this reform. He said, I don't want to hold on rigidly to communism. I will study all the world system, democracy or whatever. Whatever that is good, I will take, I will implement. That's why he came out with a very good analogy, is it? Hei Mao, Bai Mao, I don't want to divide. 总之, 能够做老鼠的就是好猫. Well, my motive of having a mouse, no, the cat, is to catch mice. And as I know, miss, you know what are mice? Yeah? The rats. They destroy things, one of. So the corrupt and the people who are very disruptive, destroying things. He wants the cat. I don't care you're a white cat or a black cat. As long as you can handle all these mouse, I will use you. That is how he came up. And he has a very wise approach. He said, 三个点. He said there are three very important understanding that he has that enable him to pull out China. But later on, they interview him. How come you have the ability to make China so different and bring China out of poverty and all those things? When they start to open up, you remember? They try all the Shenzhen, all the democracy thing. They try, then they open up. Then they realize it's very successful. It's a combination. So you don't divide. You don't be rigid. So he said, first one is the two cat, black and white, I don't care. As long as I can catch red, 第一个点就是 两只猫, I don't want to divide. 黑猫, 白猫, I don't care. As long as can catch mouse or rats, I will use them. Then the second one, he said, your heart, 心态, 要好一点. It means you must have a good heart. This one, as a government, you are not there to amass wealth, upsurge your power, control people, abuse society. No. 心态要好一点. Means you must have a good heart. Means you work for the people. That's why he called it the People's Republic of China. People come first. No people, no republic. No nation, no China. Then all the leader must remember, because of the people, there is a republic, there is a government, there is a China. And you are the government, you are behind. Now, people first, country follow the republic, then the government. And you are, after the government, the leaders. Understand? So he said, you work for all these people. That's why he defined it very well. You are the government for the people. Everything is about the people. Then no selfishness. Then how to grow. How to develop meritocracy. How to get the good people. How to go for technological advancement. How to develop the education system. The meritocracy. That's how he bring China out. 三个点. Then the third one is the best. He said, 脚步要走快一点. Do you understand? Your footstep, you must be faster than others. You wait for others to develop the thing, then only copy, you will always be behind. That's why now 5G, they are leading. That is based on 脚步要快一点. You see, such simple thing. Allow an old man to bring China out. It's because he understands all these are the downfall, the division, communism, all this so-called democracy, this system that all has its pro and con. Like Mahayana, Theravada. Why not you make use of the common good principle? Then you become a very good government. So like now, one party system, but because 心态 how, the country actually benefited. The people respect, no fight. Do you know when it's a one-party system, you save so much problem. Save money for election, no need to elect. Then the leader no need to think of how to amass wealth before they retire or before the next government take over. So no need to waste time on politics and all those things. You know. All fully focused. The leaders are all short-term one. 4 years, 8 years maximum. After that, you go, everything taken care of. Your pension, your family, your children's overseas. You don't have to think of how to make money when you're a politician. You only govern. You only use your talent. Here you are selected from the hierarchy through meritocracy. That's why their people are all very good, very well trained. And before they become leader, there is a second generation and a third generation learning from behind. All their policy, all recorded. Oh, 6 o'clock, we better end. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So I think we have to end. Okay. Anyway, thank you so much for that question, Ananda. So I hope today it benefits you all. So this sharing is, I think, in a way, very good, because a lot of things that are not supposed to be discussed, we are able to discuss them. And it has actually bring out a lot of understanding, because Dhamma can really transform your understanding. And you can see how the world become what it is. Not only your life, how society, humanity, the civilization, how they evolve and become what it is. And through observation, mindfulness, we develop the understanding. Then we straighten our view, we come out with what is best and most appropriate. That's what the Buddha's teaching is all about. The absence of evil is good. That's why his advice is very important. You follow his advice, all this selfishness won't happen. Self-delusion won't happen. Ignorance won't happen. Then the world will be beautiful. That's why this teaching is very unique, very beautiful. Okay? So now we will end officially. Then I will be sharing on merits. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana etawata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinahotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya deo asatukatena sasa sampati hetocha Tito bhavatu lokocha, raja bhavatu dhammiko, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you so much. You can pay respect to Triple Gem. Then all the worthy ones, then we end. Thank you so much. Sorry for taking the extra time. Then I think today maybe we just end. No need any further discussion. Here is already 6:03. So if you got any question or anything you want to say, maybe next session, next class, Tuesday class. Okay, we will stop.